Hi, Clive. Good morning. Good mid-morning. Tell me where you are.
Just, you know, when you say farm, it's like really a farm 2 minutes out of the side of Flit. And it's really, I mean, when I say outside of on a farm, of course it's a farm, but it's like really 5 minutes to Flit. And Flit's not a big city, eh? It's like a little town. It's a one high street. So there, like Flit, you think Flit, but it's not. It's a little high street with a couple of, no, not even a disc game, you know?
So tell me, can you see the sea?
Of course, you know, from the farm itself, where we stay in the cottage, you completely see the full bay, the Kierburg Bay, and you see the Otanequa Mountains, you see the Swartberg Mountains.
Wow.
I mean, when it snows, you can see the snow in the mountains. Exceptionally beautiful, you know?
Yeah, really nice. You know what? I want to sort of start this conversation with you. There are some things that I've always wondered about, and I've always wondered, to get back to design, if you could choose architecture and fashion design, what would you choose if you could choose again?
Architecture.
You choose architecture. Why? Why would you choose architecture, not fashion design?
Well, number one, to be a fashion designer, you're insane. It's like a lot of hard work. And you, somehow, in my mind, you don't really, it's very hard to build. Yes, of course, to be successful and all of that, but architecture is about building. You like draw a drawing, you build a building. It's like a completion, you know. Fashion is somehow never complete in my mind.
So what do you mean by that? It goes the next season, then the next season, then the next season.
No, but the next season means you like building what? You like building every season a brand new look, a whole new way. When you build a building, it can take also 2-3 years to finish a building. You know, it's not just once. We've got 2 seasons a year that come fresh from somewhere. And, you know, in a way, there's about architecture, you can talk spatially easily, where it's a very difficult subject really to engage with in fashion.
Fashion is a feeling.
Or in emotion, or it's very hard to talk about. But you know, it is there. It's just not very much spoken about. That actually, your actual show itself is actually a spatial engagement with other humans around a central topic. You know, much like a building.
I know, because you always say that you construct, you do not design. What do you mean by that when you say you construct a garment?
Well, again, it's like building. You've got whatever materials you're using. It's the same with fashion. You've got materials that you use to then begin a construction. And the construction is about the fact that you are, for me always, that you build a garment. You don't fashion a garment. You don't nothing. For me, you don't do, that's part of the fashion industry's requirement from my show, but not mine, that I require from me. I'm building something from some raw materials that have a story and an outcome and a projection. You know, I've got a projected storyline that's got to show to an audience.
Yeah. Yes, you always sort of do your own fabrics as well. So you actually start from scratch and then you actually build your collection. You're very right. You don't design your collection.
And we build everything, you know, at the same time the music is going on, it's being built into the show. The way we're going to show it, the story, the atmosphere, the everything is part of the building material. You don't just pitch with your clothes and say, okay, now what? Of course, there's a now what, but we've built the storyline clearly so that when you start, press that sound button and we're going to start the show, we've set like a spatial intention for that visual that you're about to see.
Exactly. Yeah, you're exactly right. And you know what, Clive, that brings me to the models. I mean, you've worked with incredible models over the years. I want to know what triggers, because I've seen you do castings. What triggers your attention when you choose a model? What is it that just makes it click for you when you look at a person and versus now you're going to put this person into this garment that you have constructed?
Well, it's very interesting. Very seldom do the garments change character. Once you've cast character, they become that character. It's like very difficult to put a model, same model that's in your show, in another outfit. She's become the character that is carrying that look. And then it's interesting because it's like that. Sometimes you like very, well, not the worst, not skeptical. You like you do, you take absolutely a chance on, because it's about the weakest link. Eh? The weakest link is what's going to show up. So you've got to say, okay, I'm consciously choosing a weakest link in this show and whoever it might be. And then you say, but actually, because there's so many other amazing girls there, she's either going to crack it 100% or she'll be the weakest link. And normally not. She completely sort of, we can't say rises to the occasion, but she doesn't, you know, casting is a terrible thing to do. So, I mean, it's like the most insecure one as a model could possibly make her feel. So, I mean, you can't not choose a woman on that level to show your collection when it's the like, most insecure one. So you've got to see a bit beyond the insecurity and say, you know, she's beautiful, she's got a look, she's got a way, she's got a character, she's got a personality, she's got her own thing going for her. And then you choose it on the fact that she's not walking great on that day, but she's going to do it. And then you take it on.
Yeah, and I know, yours really make the models feel beautiful. And I mean, it makes them feel special. And that is the thing about clothing. And that is the thing that we're missing at the moment with clothing, is buying that piece that is so special that you can wear it forever. You actually don't want to push it out of your cupboard. And that is what you've managed to do, is to give women that complete opportunity to be beautiful, feel beautiful when they wear your garments, and which is really, really great. Another thing is, I want to take you back to the beginning. You know, do you remember, of course you remember Barbican House. I don't know how many people know about Barbican House in the middle center of Johannesburg. I want to know, and you know, you had the top floors. I came to a fitting at Barbican House because you made me a beautiful linen full circle short. And I don't know if you know about it, but I want to know, what was it to be in a space like Barbican House that is now a historical building? What was it like being there when you were young? And, you know, you had all these beautiful models come in and out, and I was completely impressed. I think it was the first show I did for you. What was it like? What were those days like?
I mean, for us, it was just like, okay, this is where we live. This is where we sell our clothes. It's not like, okay, you know, it wasn't so much about, I'm on top of the building, I'm on top of the world. It wasn't, you know. The roof was a leak, you know. So, I mean, it was like any other, except it was completely special. But actually, it's special came when everybody went home and it was just this weird, quiet space in the middle of town that was spectacular. And I was on my own, meaning if there were people there, like it had emptied out of any, like, kind of activity, and was just this weird, you know, because it had those rooms that you had to get, climb up with a ladder on the wall to get into the top room. There weren't even steps up, you know. So it was that, for me, that was when you enjoyed the space, you know.
Yeah. That is one thing about you. You've always chosen beautiful spaces to be in. And I know you've always been in the middle of town. Tell us a bit about the other spaces, and why are you so specific when you choose best to be in?
I suppose when we initially moved, I'd really out of my mother's garage and my father's garage in the suburb, we moved to town, and our first lease was in town. And then from then on, town just became, it was always, you cannot, you know, it's so interesting. Now I'm in Plett, of course, and we look into space. There's no such a thing as a space in Plett. There's not. No, really not. Not. So, I mean, and I think the Holland Gem, Johannesburg is empty of these incredible spaces that are just like waiting for like occupancy. Maybe it's a myth that it's completely empty, but I'm sure Joburg has emptied after this last sort of a year of clamping down, you know? It would be. It's just the nature of Joburg. It's like influx, deflux, you know, it goes up and down. I mean, truly, it's full of incredibly beautiful places, full of light, full of ceiling height. It's, you know, it's just, it's got that industrial buildings that are built for, you know, for people to rent, you know.
Yeah. No, I know. You know, those years that we were in town, we were all in town. It was incredible because we used to just we could go into the buildings and go and look at the beautiful spaces because, you know, we did shoots. And so therefore we went and saw all the spaces that we could always use. It was a very, very exciting time. And yes, I remember two or three studios that you had. You also had a roof space in Doornfontein, remember? You had that beautiful space that we did the show with the girls and the balls and the crystal balls and barefoot. That Donna, your sister, shot. You want to talk to us about your sister and your relationship with your sister and how she's always shot your collections?
Well, essentially, I mean, don't know, that's why she lends the help on Zoom. But I mean, it was the fact that, in a way, Donna was a camera woman and a director. And so, you know, she had, not only did she have that as her own, but she also was attached to my creative, like,
Yeah.
you know, she could see. I mean, always, even on a show, she would be able to tell the other people in the camera, "Oh, no, you must watch the desk because it's actually at the back, not in the front. You really shouldn't just must do the front. It's also got a back." And things like that. She could give them direction as to some of what's going to unfold, you know.
Yeah, so you know the days that you were in town, you know, or that's why I know all your spaces, over and above the fact that I visited you because we plotted out your collections, and I did shows for you, and I did shows for the big corporates those years because of course the designers didn't do their own shows. You know that you were one of the first designers that actually did their own show in their studio that was shot by Donna. So those were the years that I started doing the productions, and we did productions mainly for corporates, and it was not really what we're doing now with the South African Fashion Week. So yeah, it was a fantastic time. It was a time full of creativity and full of designers. And I don't know if you remember, but the designers all had little stores. And I think we're getting to that time again. We're getting another opportunity to go through that. And I'm very privileged to go through another sort of cycle is opening their own stores. Which I want to ask you, because I was thinking this morning, when did you open your first store, Clive? When did you open it?
It was in the mall in Rosebank.
In
And
Rosebank.
yeah, it was a very beautiful shop. It was truly beautiful shop.
It was.
Yeah, even if I say myself again, it was a truly beautiful shop. And I mean, I can't remember when that was. It was 1989, 19, somewhere around there. 89, 90.
Yeah, so your shop, I think, was the first, or your store was the first store, and I remember it very well. That was like an art gallery. It had an art gallery feeling because you had all those incredible elements, those little statues that you've kept with you, the angels, the wing statues, and I remember your mother always working in your store. You have this incredible mother, you know. Where is she? What is she doing? And do you miss having a store? Do you miss having your mother in your store?
You know, I don't know if you miss my mother. She's exactly right here on the farm, not in my house, but she's on the farm in her own cottage, looking
Nice.
over the dam, and never where she ever thought she, as a Johannesburger, would ever end up, was on a farm with geese and horses and in mud. That was
Wow.
not my mother's dream, but truly it's fantastic work. And she's not been in any situation, lockdown, whatnot. We can visit her. She's available. She can walk around the farm. She's free. So it's amazing. It's like just the universe put in a place that is completely not of her want, but truly has been a blessing.
Yeah.
So we see that
Yeah.
again. Well, like a car park, we walk across the horse yard to get to each other, you know?
Yeah. You know, that is incredible. And you know something, that is something you've always believed in, Clive, and that is in sort of like your dreams come true and in destiny, and things will happen the way it will turn out. And even your team, you know, I remember going to one of your birthdays, and I don't know which one it was, whether it was 40, 50 or yeah, and you had your whole team there, your whole team of women. Do you remember?
No, I just remember there was a 40 and a 50 and a waka kot and a waka kot. We weren't saying how old I am, but there were a couple of those.
No, no.
Jones.
Yeah. No, it's amazing because creative mind always stays the same. It doesn't age. And that is really absolutely fantastic. You know, if you understand that in your room. But so I traveled, I must tell you that the very first time I went overseas, I went to.
Listen, you've got to tell the story about China. That's the best story of all, how we ended up with doing that show in China with all those banners, with all the names of the designers on down. And that was Shanghai, wasn't it?
That was Shanghai. I know. So that was a show that I did with the World Gold Council. And it was the World Gold Council from Geneva that put the show together, and we did the show in Shanghai. It was really incredible because I went there 2 weeks before the show to do the castings, and we cast it in a film studio that was a Deco film studio. It was absolutely incredible in Shanghai, and they had all the shacks that there were shacks those years. Remember, it was not what they have now. They had shacks, and I found these incredibly beautiful girls. And then you guys arrive, and you designed the clothes for every scene. So we had the jewelry here. Such a long story. We had the jewelry. The jewelry was sent to us, or some of the jewelry. And then we sent the themes to you, and you actually designed the clothes for absolutely the whole show. And it was incredible because when we got to China, it was like a Chinese designer designed this, because you designed it with an African design soul, but it fitted completely into this beautiful, with these beautiful pieces of jewelry. And so just to tell you the story, so that we started the rehearsals at this 5-star hotel. And the next day, so we did the rehearsals. The next day was the show. So we had to do a dress rehearsal the next day. And when I arrived...
We had to do the dress rehearsal for the party. The party members came and sat in the front to see if what you were going to do, memorandum or their whatever, their 10 laws
exactly.
of the universe.
But they had all the uniforms on. And then what happened is they took all the models that I selected away, and they gave me all new models that were all short and completely sort of come from, I don't know, working in bars. Remember?
Oh, they were all family members at the party. So if you wanted to do your show, they had to be the family members' kids that were now going to be in your show, not the model.
It was ridiculous. I was a complete nervous wreck. I cannot even tell you, because that evening I had to do completely new models that knew nothing. They could not walk on a runway, and we couldn't send them home. We had to give them one room to go and all have a bath and get them ready. The hairdressers didn't have enough time. I did the hair as well, because we did remember, I had that very specialized hair for them. And it was incredible, because once I did the show, the Chinese, the government people wouldn't turn their back on me. They were thanking me and would walk backwards, and because then they understood what we were doing. But Clive, I mean, your clothes were so amazing, and they had these big banners in the street with all the model faces on and your garments, and we had flags, South African flags and gold flags, and it was incredible. It was absolutely an incredible production. And yes, we had it for 3 days. It was 3 days, and every day they served meals, you know, those 5-star, 12 courses of meals for everybody. And it was unbelievable, unbelievable.
So my best part was the people who came to the show actually won in a draw, but they were not anybody who had any inclination with fashion. They won their tickets. And they came to the show and they sat in the seat. And they were stunned at that. They were literally, for the first time, seeing semi-naked girls, because of course we were completely inappropriate, really. Semi-naked girls going across the street, and they were like, their mouths were just like, you could see the fashion was like, I mean, people rode bicycles and still wore their little gray multicolored outfit. I mean, that's those days.
But you know, the girls were all very sweet at the end of the day when I got to know them. I mean, they were all very sweet, and they were, just to tell you, there was this one girl, when I asked her what her name was, she said to me, "My name is Meow, like a cat," she said to me. That was the only English she could have sort of speak. And then one day I heard it, and I called my interpreter, because remember, nobody understood English, so I had two translators to do the show with. So I called Elvis, which was my one translator, that incredible boy. And I said, "You know, who is this girl?" She was singing backstage. I went backstage and she was singing. She was sitting in front of the mirror and she was singing. And then I said to him, "Go and find out who she was, this beautiful voice in this Chinese opera." And he came back to me and he said to me that her mother was a Chinese opera singer. So, you know, it was such an incredible journey. And after that, I've done two other productions in China and Shanghai and Hong Kong and in Guangzhou and in Beijing. And it was absolutely amazing seeing how the Chinese have built undergrounds, huge buildings, everything in 10 years, because I went 10 years, then another 10 years, and another 10 years.
In 10 years, I built New York. 10 years later, we went back and everyone spoke English. If all the buildings had been finished from the 10 year before that, when we were there the first time, that 35,000 building sites of black doors, like, I don't know, 100-story building. Every morning we'd open the window and say, "Oh, look, there's another one," you know? And the beautiful thing was, those buildings all had the bamboo scaffolding. The 100-story buildings still had bamboo scaffolding. It was absolutely beautiful.
It was. So just so to clarify, so they didn't have the scaffolding that we have here. Everything was built from bamboo. And I have a picture of a man that on his bicycle has got this huge cupboard with a mirror in the middle. You know those, you get them, you still get them. It's got the two doors and then it's got the mirror in the middle. And he had this strapped to the side of his bicycle. It was absolutely incredible to just be part of that era in time, and then to go back and to see how they'd actually worked throughout the night. They would put those big film lights, I'm sure they got them from the film studio, put that up and just built through the night. Rain, sunshine, they were just built. It was incredible. And then we've done Berlin. Remember the Berlin show? So we did Berlin.
Yeah, that should remind me about Berlin.
Remember, we did Berlin, and then we went to Greece afterwards. The two of us went to Greece afterwards. We did the hair, the World Hair Show in Berlin.
Oh, yeah.
You remember?
We've done a lot over many years in many, many countries. It's quite weird.
I know. We've really done a lot. So you've also worked, you know what? And the first time I saw Stephen Cohen, I mean, he's just such a person in your life. You've done an incredible thing. Incredible work with Stephen Cohen. And you told me the other day about how many times he's worn one of your dresses. Just remind me of that again, because it's such an incredible story.
Well, I don't know how many times he's worn it, but the stable dress he says it's got its own passport. I think it's been to 30 different countries not so much appearance, but he does. He wears it for press or in the street or whatever. It's that, you know, we did that staple dress of where we stapled 100,000 staples in the dress. So I mean, this one that now to shreds, really, it's completely falling apart. But I mean, to think that dress, in a way, acquired its own life of 30 countries is astounding, you know?
Yeah, no, it's incredible. And I just want to somebody listens to this, just to tell them that the staple dress was talking about Clive designing his own fabric. He actually took fabric and he stapled 100,000. Was it 100,000 staples?
Yeah, 100,000.
100,000 staples. One staple after another. all the staples together to form this dress completely filled with staples. It was absolutely incredible. One of my last questions to you is something that is completely different off the subject. Do you think that there's enough support for designers in South Africa?
You know, it's, the landscape is changing. So, you know, we've been through many, I mean, South Africa itself, I mean, if you go just along the, whichever timeline you want to follow, the political, the social, whatever, it's like we've been through many eras, and as myself as a designer within the fashion industry. So, you know, now it's different that there is a global interest in African fashion, including South Africa as part of the continent. So, I mean, that's like a different mindset than we ever started out with. So we didn't have that support. Like people being interested in us as African designers or interested in African fashion. So we were just, I mean, of course, it was also part of it. So we were completely off the map for many, many, many years, you know? So, I mean, it's fantastic that there is that now interest in the continent of Africa and what kind of here happens that has been also been, what can I say, not, it's been not invisible, but it's just been happening on its own for many, many years without too much, which I think is fantastic because, you know, of course, once people start putting their eyes on it, it also means the aesthetic does change. I mean, we've also been lucky that, I mean, we have been free of all the prying eyes for many, many years. And now, of course, it's going to transform how people present their visual aesthetic, I believe, you know, that there is an interest. But then you have to fit the global mark with the global, what can you say, there's a global pattern for fashion.
No, absolutely. And just in closing, why are the designers important in a country? Why do you think, you know, I've always felt that without design, there's no fashion. And we should be a designer-led industry and not a manufacturing-led industry. And that is what I'm trying to change. And that is what I've been trying to change for 23 years. But why do you think designers are important in a country?
Well, I think fashion, clothes themselves have now become like a language. I mean, emojis are marriages, but clothes have the same power. One visual of that, whatever it is, top dress, bottom pants, tells a million stories, I mean, that are vital to, like, how everybody, the whole society, how our whole society, I mean, we can talk about South Africa, our whole society operates. Whichever one you are talking about, conservative, not conservative, whatever, it's like there's a spectrum of like images that tell story. Images. I mean, fashion and design is about images. It's not about anything else. It's an image that tells a story.
So, yeah, I absolutely agree with you. So, Clive, it was incredible speaking to you. Really incredible. And yes, you know, I hope you have a one to the farm, and maybe I can come and visit you in a short time. Yeah, thank you very much. Thank you for taking my call, and thank you for speaking to us.
Pleasure. Thank you. Nice to speak to you.
Very nice. Thank you.
Ciao, ciao.